Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey guys, welcome to the 100 After Show. I'm your host, Tari J. Miller, and joining me today is Ben Bateman.
Hey guys, what's going on? Happy to be back in studio.
And today we're going to be discussing season 2, episode 3, Repercussions. It's clever.
That was just Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult. It's 2 and 2 together. It's what we do here at AfterBuzz TV.
Oh yeah. I think he could use more cowbell though.
Everything could use more cowbell. Even this episode of the 100 could have used more cowbell.
That would have been really sweet if all of the Reapers were just holding cowbells the whole
right.
time. Like, you would always know they're coming, and it would be a great set piece.
There would be a hilarious dream sequence where you would just have, like, the band, except they would be, like, played by Reapers, and they'd all be cowbelling. That's like, Clark should have, like, a dream, and it's, like, them doing their version of Don't Fear the Reaper.
That would be amazing.
Right, and Anya is, actually, she's not a Reaper, so.
Anyone who animates, make this a thing.
Yeah, I'll laugh. I'll do more than that. I'll appreciate it. Oh, frog in my throat.
So let's get general thoughts on the episode.
Well, the first thing I notice is I don't feel like this episode really moved the show forward very much.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting, actually, that I feel like you notice in a lot of shows is that, after about 2 or 3 episodes, is things, like, slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you absolutely adore a show, as you get later into seasons of shows where its characters are super, super developed, it's easier to do. With a newer show like this, it is hard to slow things down.
Yeah.
Just because, like, there were some pretty sweet payoffs in the first 2 episodes. And mm-hmm. this one, yeah, I mean, it was fine. It wasn't a bad episode by any means. It just was a little bit less compelling.
Right. I mean, this episode felt like it was really just trying to get people from point A to point B. But essentially, since they're following so many different storylines, it makes it hard for each one to just, like, punch you in the face each episode. So I think this was more of a, like, mid chess game where it's just like, I'm going to move my rook here, and next episode, you're going to see my knight do some stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's always interesting when you think about, like, each of your major characters at the beginning of the episode and at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
What's actually happened in mm-hmm. that 42 minutes. And when you think about, well, we'll talk about the episode. But if you just think about each of your major characters or your factions of the characters in the show,
yeah,
where they start, where they end, it didn't really feel like we were in that different of a place when this episode ended.
Right.
Mostly, yeah, you were just kind of on, one step forward in the path, but not by a significant enough margin that I felt like my mind was blown or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I will say that a character that I felt made a good arc this episode was Octavia. She started out, she's this season been kind of growing into a warrior, essentially. And so in this episode, we see her meeting up with the Grounders. First, they try to kill her. And then after a nice chase and a little bit of tracking, they end up fighting the Grounders together. And I thought that was a really great sequence.
Yeah, it is interesting to see the way they're using her character. I know I complained a lot about her in the last after show, and it's funny to think about that if they successfully can transform her from, like, annoying female teen CW lead to basically, like, a kind of badass character. Like, it's weird to see the outlines of the character coming together. You saw it when she hits Nico, I think is his name, with the rock in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this episode, she's fighting a little bit. And I mean, maybe I'll be convinced. I don't know. Maybe she'll just behead somebody and my mind will just be blown. I'll want to marry her. But as of now, I'm just slightly changing a little bit.
Right. Well, I mean, she did slash that Reaper real good. And she was
real good,
pretty
man.
Fearless.
Yeah.
Like that moment where she was standing on the hilltop and was like, I ain't scared. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. This is what I want. you know?
Strong declaration, yeah. She like, there's a feeling behind it, I agree.
And she was willing to be bait, which I, as a human being, would be like, heck no.
Right.
But she was willing to do whatever she could for her man.
Yeah, I do think that that sequence was a little silly, just the fact that... Okay, so she goes, she's desperate, she's stranded, she goes back to the camp because she thinks, I need to get Lincoln back, and mm-hmm. I can't do it on my own, and I want him back, so I'm gonna go back to these grounders. And they're like, yeah, obviously, kill her, what are you doing? Just like, what are you doing back here? Like, you are screwing with us. And she's like, uh-oh, I'll just run away, and I'll just hide behind this tree, and you woods people that live in the woods and track people and chase animals, through, you're not gonna catch the fact that I just hid behind this tree. That was, to me, was just like, what? That's right. That was your choice? You're running away, you're maybe 45 yards ahead of these people, and you hide behind a tree and you just get away with it? Which I guess, again, was, this is another one of those, I crossed out my notes, but she, you know, it was revealed that they knew that she was following them the whole time. And so did you notice that in that sequence, when they're like, we're going to use her as bait, they switch from their their native tongue to English?
Yeah.
Which I'm assuming was that so she knew what they were talking about. They wanted to, they changed the English so that she could hear.
Right.
But more than that, I just noticed the language that they're speaking is pretty well developed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the book, like, I don't think we're reading like J.R. Tolkien here. I don't know if like the books had a language written, or if they're just like loosely basing this on something else, Latin or something. I don't really know. Right. But it is kind of impressive to see them speaking a made up language in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that always, I don't know, I'm using words right now. I mean, yeah, that is always impressive, and I don't think that there was a language specifically in the books. But I mean, nowadays you can't just like do gibberish and expect people to accept it as a new language. So I mean, they're springing for people to come in, and I would actually really like to know. I mean, if anybody knows what the derivatives of the language that they're speaking are. I would gladly appreciate any insight on that.
And I just received the books in the mail. I ordered them this week.
Nice.
I intend to read the first one by next week. So, hopefully I'll be able to shine some light on that as well.
Awesome.
Though I know the show, it diverges from the book quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not expecting to like, you know, have my mind blown or anything, but I thought it'd be kind of an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
The context of the show.
Well, I expect a 10-page report on my desk by Monday. Double space, 1-inch margins.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
Smiley face on the top.
Okay.
All right.
Let's move on from that.
But yeah, so, after that fight, Octavia is accepted as one of the grounders.
Did you believe that when she was, they used her as bait, so that's why they keep her alive.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty smart, pretty ruthless people in the woods. I mean, they have to survive on their wits and their physicality.
Yeah.
Did you believe that because she was willing to be bait and fight, that they wouldn't just kill her for screwing with them?
I think that the final straw that allowed them to trust her was the fact that her final strike was to was saving their leader. So one, she was willing to go along with their plan, which helped them save their own people.
Yep.
Because if we've learned nothing about the grounders, it's that they are definitely community oriented.
Sure.
Like, they really care about their people.
Yep.
And so I feel like her helping them do that, even though she wasn't successful in her own goal, ultimately led to them trusting her.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm noticing that as the show goes forward, and I don't think it's unfair for them to be doing this, there does seem to be a little bit of like a division in the way that the grounders act towards the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice it in the way that like the hunting party at the end, the guy they take prisoner in this episode, spoiler alert later in the episode, you notice it in the army commander that gets incinerated, or he doesn't get incinerated. Melvin, Chuck, whatever we don't know what to call him.
Yes.
He has a name.
Tristan.
Tristan. This is his name. you just notice there's a difference in attitude.
Yeah.
Some of them are super aggressive. The way Anya acts is a little strange to me at sometimes.
Yeah.
Then these grounders are a little bit more accepting and softer.
I think
it's a tribe of people, right? Everybody acts a little different.
Yeah.
They're not all the same.
Right. I think if I were to make a guess, I think it's a rank kind of thing. Because, like, Tristan and Anya were both high-ranking generals, essentially.
Sure.
They both led their own pack, so I think that kind of led them to be more decisive in their ability to, like, go, I'm going to kill this person, or I'm going to keep them alive.
Right.
Whereas, like, I felt like the community that Lincoln had brought Octavia to was just kind of like an outpost. They happened to be warriors, but they weren't necessarily, like, a military faction.
That's fair. Yeah, it's a tribe of people. There's obviously, I guess, hundreds at least. Over 1,000 maybe. So, yeah, they're all going to be a little different. Not everybody is the same, harsh or soft or whatever.
Yeah. But speaking of groups and communities, let's jump over to Camp Jaha for a little bit.
Okay.
So, basically, we come in and Kane is figuring out that the kids are gone. He confronts Abby about it. And she comes out and says, yeah, I'm going to do whatever it takes to find those kids.
Yeah, I'm going to defy you, and you'll get mad, and then we'll just do this every single episode. I'll just defy you every episode.
Right.
You'll furrow your brow.
And I'm really glad that he brought up that she's had this track record of always just doing whatever the heck she wants. Because, I mean, yes, she's useful.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't keep having this defiant character always undermining your authority.
So one thing I thought was really interesting, he says to his captain, the blonde woman
with
the gun, says, Abby is the most respected person here. He says she was a former member of the council and she's the most respected person here. That shines an interesting light on Kane, because it means that Kane is not as much of an egotist and thinks he's the most important person there.
Yeah.
If he's fully aware of the fact that she is the most respected enough so to say it to an officer, that shows there's a little bit more of a softness to his character than we sometimes get from him.
Yeah.
The egomaniac almost that you get at the very beginning of the show, I think, might have just been a cliche they decided to get away from as the show got more intelligent.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. However, in contrast to it, when she gets the lashings, I don't know that that makes any sense to me. I understand that he wanted to send an example. However, you're going to get a full-scale mutiny on your hands if you try to humiliate the most respected person and sympathetic person in camp in front of the whole camp.
Yeah.
Even if it is to set an example, that's a hard thing to come back from.
Right. Well, I think that he sees both sides of it. I mean, yes, she's the most respected person, but if she essentially sets the example that people can kind of just do whatever they want, then others will follow her being the most respected. Whereas, like,
true,
if he shows that there's still law, even though that they're in this new plane, it stands that he can kind of keep some kind of order. Cause right now he's barely holding on. And that's what kind of came through at the beginning of the season, where he was really trying to keep that tight fist on everybody.
Right.
But as we go on, and as the episode progresses, we see that he's still trying to figure things out, and he's still, like, isn't the hard ass we think he is.
So, but here's an interesting point on that. All of the humiliation that she's caused him in defying him to this point has not been publicly, it has not been, like, in public exposition to the people.
Yeah.
Whether it was on the ship or anything. This is the first time that the people have been alerted to the fact that she's broken the law. I mean, she was arrested for, like, a brief second when they were on the Ark in season one, but she was quickly let out. The fact that, imagine that you're a person, you're at Camp Jaha, and you see Abby Griffin getting lashed.
Yeah.
You don't know that she has defied, defied Kane so many times.
Yeah.
I don't know that you're on the same level that he is. He's frustrated. He feels like she's done enough time. She broke the law. She needs to be punished. Just thinking as a person at that camp, I don't know how I would have reacted.
I mean, yeah, that's a really interesting point. Because, yeah, none of them really know the extent of her crimes. And so I assume that, and we see it on their faces, that they are more responding in horror, not like, yeah, she's getting what she deserves.
Hmm.
So I think that is what led him to, I mean, yeah, that essentially led him to realize that he's not the proper person to lead the group.
Was he giving, well, we'll get to that at the end of the episode. We can get to that, but
yeah,
let's wrap Jaha, Camp Jaha. Was there anything else that happened there that's super relevant? She gets lashed.
I mean, we can put a bow on that by, like, going into that. So, essentially, after the lashings, they had brought in a... Before the lashings, they brought in a grounder.
Prisoner, yeah.
Which caused a man to be shot because they... All the people of Camp Jaha reacted and wanted their children back. And so, in the scuffle, someone was shot, which ultimately led Kane to believe that he needed to do the lashings.
Right.
After the lashings and after he starts to interrogate the grounder, who he's getting nowhere with, he says a line that Jaha, I believe, said in the first season, where it was, there's got to be a better way to live.
Right, that's right.
And I think that is the turning point where he realized that, like, even though he has the best intentions, he's still a soldier. He's not a king.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair point. I did find it interesting, and we'll get to this in a minute, but I found it interesting that they put the scenes, the interrogation scenes, back to back.
Yes.
Put the kids and the adult interrogation scenes, clearly trying to prove a point to us and showing you the sort of mirror images of the way things are handled, and then just the difference and where the adults are at, where the kids are at.
Yeah.
I thought that was it was a very deliberate and obvious use.
Yeah.
But a good one nonetheless. Sometimes being obvious is good.
Right. I mean, and that's the whole, I think that this whole episode was about assorted parallels and that, like, every group was trying to figure out their different pairings and their different, like, collaborations, whether it be Clark and Anya, or the kids trying to figure out their own hierarchy, or Octavia and the grounders,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
So, but yeah, that was a great mirror in that moment, which I guess should lead us into the kids section.
Yeah, so the kids are out in the woods, and they are hunting for their friends, and they still believe, they don't know about Mount Weather, that there's mountain men that took their friends. They still believe that the grounders have Clark and Jasper and Jasper.
Yeah.
Jasper. And this plot line to me was sort of highlighted by the final scene of the show.
Yeah.
But aside from that scene, totally irrelevant. It just did nothing for me. I mean, they basically could have condensed the entirety of their whole sequence in this episode into, yeah, like 3 or 4 minutes. You didn't really need to see him at all, right?
I agree. I think the purpose of it was to show Finn's descent.
Right.
Which, yeah, I agree. It could have just been like one chunk of time.
Yeah.
But I mean, they need to keep us motivated to keep watching the different sections. And, like, it helps to kind of separate out the different storylines. But that's just,
yeah,
scripty stuff. But I think that this was really, to me, it was really important because Finn was, like, the biggest pacifist.
Yeah, right.
The last season. And for him to go crazy like this. I wrote in my notes that he goes ballistic.
Yeah.
Because I think that it shows that he's so desperate at this point because he's so close to Clark with,
yeah,
with that watch.
Right.
But he's so far and he has no idea what to,
right,
do.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's like seeing the watch, like, really set him off.
Yeah.
Did you think for a second when they were scoping the guys in the woods, they were just going to let loose and just execute them? Just, they have rifles with scopes and these guys have like axes. There was a minute for me where I was like, they're going to pop three of these guys in the head and just walk over to the other one with guns.
Right. Well, I mean, that would be proper, special ops kind of procedure.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically take out all the opposition, assert your dominance, and then get the information you need.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, I'm never surprised in the show anymore. If they had just done that, would have been, I think, a little bit too much to ask that these kids would have been able to, like, accurately snipe three guys from a distance.
Right.
With, like, one shot each.
Yeah.
You know, things. But it would have been even probably more awesome had they tried and, like, gotten one of them in the head, like, one in the shoulder, and, like, it's just messy. And just,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyway, I didn't know where I'm going with that.
I mean, yeah, it would have been a pretty cool sequence. It would have been so, like, it would have been, what, yeah, it would have been wild, because, like, I'm just imagining it in my mind, and it would have been, they probably would have got one, not even in any vital spot. The other ones would have just scattered, and then it would have just been a bloodbath.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's I think that's pretty fair. It probably would not have ended well. Maybe the kids know that. And Finn, rightfully, hadn't crossed that line yet.
Yeah.
He crosses it at the end of the show. That's right. The first person that he shoots, right? Had he killed anyone in the show at that point?
Not that I know of, because he was definitely anti-killing up until now.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. I guess, we're talking about the whole segment of the kids together. Yeah, so their interrogation of the guy was pretty predictable. Were you surprised? I mean, when Finn's hitting him, I was not surprised.
I was surprised mostly because it was Finn. Because our history with torture on this show it's been really, really, kind of a tormented section.
Yeah.
Like when they were torturing Lincoln, it was so reluctant that it made it feel so uncomfortable because that no one wanted to take part. No one wanted to participate in this.
Right.
Even as Bellamy did it, he's like, just tell me something so I can stop doing this.
And he uses the same line, right?
Yeah.
He turns it around on him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's originally Finn that says to him, some lies you can't uncross.
Yeah.
Right? Bellamy says that to him. One thing that bothers me is that Bellamy's character is almost like, okay, so like Murphy.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting out of Murphy. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Clark, you know exactly what you're getting out of Clark. Up to this point, you knew what you were getting out of Finn. It's nice to see that his character has evolved, and it's interesting to see such a goody character going crazy because it's the reality of the situation. But Bellamy, it's almost like they give you the side of Bellamy that's convenient for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this moment, when he's saying some lines you can't uncross and... I think Bellamy's a little more ruthless than that. He led the party that incinerated 300 grounders. I think he would realize what Finn realized. You can't leave this guy out there. You're going to have to execute him. You can't torture a guy, threaten him, and then expect... You know what I mean?
Right. Well, but for me, I think that like it shows that he's grown beyond that. Because he started out as the aggressor, and he's kind of... He's now reflecting on what he's done, and he is... realizing that there's a better way to live. Like,
sure.
I mean, yeah, they couldn't have let him loose, but they rightfully could have left him there and then gotten a good enough head start.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the sort of thing where you're like, maybe you've softened up, but if the other guys have gotten to this point where they're realizing the stakes of where they're really at and their friends have been captured, I don't know that Bellamy would have been that. It just feels like that was a little too, like... we don't want to do this. Like, we don't want to kill him. It's like, come on, Bellamy. You know the stakes. You know that these guys are going to kill you if they get the chance.
Right.
They will murder you. If they can stab you, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And this guy will do it. If he sees you again, he's going to kill you. So, I don't know. It's like, this show starts to take you down this path of like the reality of the situation in a lot of these cases. You see it so often where these characters do understand the stakes. I don't like it when one of the characters that feels like he's sort of the most evolved and grown does something that doesn't feel like his character anymore.
Right.
That's all.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
If I were trying to argue this point, which I'm not really, I would say that like, he's a human, and humans are inconsistent.
Sure,
and
sure.
So, if anything, he's being the most realistic of them all.
Maybe.
Is an argument. It's an argument.
It's an argument. And I wasn't that passionate about that point. It was just interesting that you see... It's just interesting to see Finn evolving in this direction that Bellamy felt like he was already... Maybe it was bravado. Maybe it was bravado earlier in the show. But anyway, that being said...
Right. And kind of jumping off that, a lot of it was bravado in that he felt like he had to lead these people.
And he didn't know how.
Yeah.
Right. So he tried to assert his dominance in some ways.
Yeah.
It's fair.
So that was that. And this is this. I'll tell you what you got and I'll tell you what you get. iTunes is what you get. So, hey guys, let's take a little minute to talk about you. We really enjoy listening to your or reading your comments, and we really want to hear from you. So if you could go on iTunes, leave us a rating, 5 stars if you love what we're doing, 4 stars if you don't, and keep going on YouTube and subscribe, like the videos that we do. The people here at AfterBuzz TV put up over 70 hours of content a week, and it's just for you. We don't charge any money. All that we ask is that you talk to us and let us know what we can do to give you the best shows possible. So do the thing, and we will keep continuing to give you amazing content.
100%.
Heck yeah. 100%.
110, at least. So, So getting back to the moments in the show, just one thing, and I know I've referenced this a couple times, but there was an exterior on Camp Jaha that I just remembered of. I said this to you while you were watching it, but just cool to see the sets being built. You could tell that it wasn't CG. There were moments in this episode that were CG. This one wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to know that there are actors that are truly filming in this kind of environment. Oh, something else that I wanted to point out, by the way, about Bellamy and the kids. So there's like a couple shots in the first season where it's like Bellamy emerges from his tent shirtless with two girls, and you're just like, oh my god, this is like 90210 right now, except it's like The Hunt. We've made this comment before. You haven't gotten any of that nonsense this season.
Yeah.
None of it.
I actually love the fact that he is so cut up and bruised and battered. Like, you could barely tell what his face looks like under all the, like, scarring and stuff, which is great. It shows that, like, the show itself has grown beyond the need to give fan service like that. It's like, no, now you focus on this character.
Right. So, jumping around, I believe that... That does cover pretty much everything to do with the kids.
Yeah, right? That was kids. Their whole storyline. So Finn shoots the guy in the head.
Yeah, which satisfying ending. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. So then you move to the rest of the kids. The rest of the kids who conveniently are only 3 kids. You see Miller in one scene last episode.
Right.
And the other, I don't know, 43 kids or something?
It was the 48, yeah.
There's like 44 other kids. I feel like we haven't even like gotten a line. You see a couple of them in the bunks in the background, like a little bit, but you just don't even have any interaction with them. I mean, Lost was notorious for doing this. You'd see people in the background. They'd occasionally bring them out of the woodwork, but this is just absurd. you're literally just not even, I know nothing about the other 44 people. Like,
they're teenagers. I mean, for me, I think that like, it's better that they're not like, all right, every kid is going to get their own storyline, and they're going to be part of it. Just because, like, we have a million people we're following right now. I do agree that there could be more interaction, especially because Monty and Jasper are only interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And then we have Maya, who is a mountain person.
Right.
They're not even, like, she's not even one of the original 48 who was part of the original 100.
Right.
So I do agree that more people should be asking where Clark is.
That's what I'm saying. So instead of Monty coming up to Jasper and going, hey, have you guys seen Clark? It could have been like 3 kids playing checkers, and Monty walks up and he's like, hey, have you guys seen Clark? Like, no, we haven't, Monty. And then all of a sudden it's 3 faces in a line out of one person. You're like, oh, if that person comes the next episode, maybe I'll remember them. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be really, really inconvenient when it feels like we get 4 new characters in the middle of the season that we just didn't know before. It's like kind of what they did with Miller. You just see him in that one line. You're like, oh, Miller exists now.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's his dad. How convenient. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see, but I'm predicting. So,
I mean, yeah, I agree. Like you, and I, from a production standpoint, it's like, we don't want to pay these extras. But I mean, I'm hoping that we get a little more time with them, and like at the end or at some point, there'll be like a nice little rally, and you'll be like, "Ah, oh, familiar faces."
Yeah, you'll get a few people, I'm sure. Looks that way,
because like Monty is kind of leading he seems like he's going to start leading the charge on figuring out what's really going on. He's not drinking the Kool-Aid the way that Jasper is.
Did you like, so something that always occurs to me when I watch this show is that these kids are like 15 or 16, and as mature as they try to make some of them seem, I like that Jasper was like, I'm sure Clark's just fine. I want to go have pancakes with my new girlfriend. Like, you're like, yeah, you're a 16-year-old kid. Like, you're going to be pretty careless and immature. You don't really, you care, but like, you're just really selfish because that's just what you want to do, is just talk to your new girlfriend. It was obviously a sugar-coated, watered-down version of that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was... I was like, oh, wow, that seems unrealistic. Then it's like, nah, he's a kid. That's maybe what he would do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and we touched a little bit on how, like, the moment they all got in this mountain village town...
Yeah.
...mountain place... they're all just like, yeah, I don't have to care about anything.
Yeah.
It's like mommy's paying for my bed again, even though they all lived on a spaceship and they don't know anything about what I just said. Because they didn't have to go off to college or live with their parents. It doesn't matter. Anyways. but just to recap this portion.
Yeah.
So Clark had... slipped herself into Anya's cage because one of the doctors was checking on the bleeding harvest.
Yep.
And which, can I say, is like the worst idea in the world to be like, oh, I'm going to put myself in this cage because someone is on the outside of it.
Right.
And the lock was right there. That lady could have been like, oh, this is convenient. Lock, show over.
Right. Also the lock, which was... you have to have found that as absurd as I did. Clark's like, all right, I gotta break this lock. I'm gonna tear a pipe out of the wall. That's a nice sturdy pipe. I'll just pull it out of the wall. And then I'm just gonna wedge this pipe into this lock and just twist it and grunt, and it's gonna just unlock.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go steal a couple bikes on the way home, Tari. I'm just gonna go take a wrench and just go wedge that wrench into some locks and just steal bikes, because it's that easy, apparently.
Yeah. If I've learned anything from TV, everything is super easy.
I'm not going to really steal bikes, guys. I don't do that. That was a joke.
In recent news, there have been a rash of bike thefts going on. No. Suspect hasn't been caught.
Strike that from the record. So, yeah. It's right. So, but she's in the cage, and so, she sees the people, and she breaks the lock, and then she takes Anya, and they escape. And are confronted by some Reapers.
Yeah.
And then, yes.
I loved the trap door as well. Just like they get into the spot and they're like, oh man, we're kind of safe, right?
Right.
And it's just, gug-gug.
Yeah.
Drop down. They're in Reaper tunnels surrounded by, oh no, they drop onto a bunch of dead bodies, right?
Yeah. So that's like, that's another one of these things where last week at the end of the episode, you saw the hanging bodies and you're reminded of just kind of how gnarly the show wants to get.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody mentioned in our comments, it was like a Matrix rip. Which is true. The harvest, the whole like harvest, yeah, which is cool. And then, but just like falling in like the barrel of dead bodies, not barrel, like a wheelbarrow, I guess.
Right,
of dead bodies. That's pretty cool to be seeing it on a CW show. I say this every week, but again, it's pretty like gnarly stuff. Like it's a bunch of dead bodies covered in bandages that have been drained of their blood.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's really, and then they look down the hallway, and it's just. They're just eating, screaming, like either like barely alive or dead people. Man, I mean, there's a movie called The Road. Did you ever see it?
I haven't seen it.
It's pretty gnarly. It's a Cormac McCarthy book. It's really, really, really dark.
That's what I hear.
Post-apocalyptic, Viggo Mortensen and his son are going across the country trying to survive. And there's a lot of cannibalism in the book and in the movie. And it's you watch the movie and it's like the cannibalism scenes are definitely the most frightening. And it's just weird when you're watching, like, a teen drama with a bunch of pretty people, and then all of a sudden it's just these bloody mountain men are eating live people, and you're hearing them scream. It's just, like, it's, like, unsettling, and then you're just like, man, I'm watching the CW, and this is happening.
Which is why I like this show.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you get those really rich moments of, like, oh, there are stakes, and things are terrifying. Like, I mean, because especially you get that, and then that moment when Clark gets cornered by all the Reapers, you're like, oh, there is legitimate reason to fear.
And you never know if anyone's safe in this show.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they killed Clark, but you never know.
I mean, they could. I mean, they are setting up Octavia to be the new lead, so they could be like, all right, you thought she was safe, and bam, she's gone. Monty will take the lead. Octavia takes the lead.
Something.
We got new protagonists.
Yeah, it'd be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was... She gets cornered, and they use those high-pitched taser beams or something.
Yeah.
Why do they only affect Reapers? Why was Clark okay and safe and didn't seem to be affected? Did you know? Did you...
Maybe I'm assuming that it, like, is a specific frequency that messes with... I'm gonna say mad cow brain.
Okay.
Like, I mean, because we know scientifically that if you eat human flesh, the folds of your brain start to come undone and it drives you insane.
Really? I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's
that's like what happens with mad cow disease, is like when cows are fed their own meat.
Yeah.
Or at least byproducts of their own meat, their brain starts to unfold and it drives them insane.
Jeez.
So I'm assuming that maybe there's something in their minds that will essentially like picks up these tones that they're using. And so it debilitates them in the same way that like there are specific tones that will make you nauseous because your inner ear is where all your balance comes from. So
gotcha.
If you get an inner ear infection, you can get vertigo. Huh. These are a lot of, I'm spouting out a lot of science. Science, guys. It's science fiction.
I am learning something on this show.
But yeah, so that was my assumption.
Okay. That's totally fair. So we saw something. We saw sort of a gimmick or an idea that was actually amazingly pointed out to us on YouTube by a user who I wish I had accurately written down, Lee Smith, maybe? You're awesome. I don't have your username written down. But you suggested in our YouTube comments that you thought perhaps the mountain people were capturing grounders, draining them of their blood, then dropping them as essentially trade for... I'm looking at you, Tari, but I'm actually looking at you, YouTube user, whose name I wish I could accurately quote, and we're draining their blood and then trading them, essentially, so that's when Lincoln gets captured and he gets brought in by the grounders, or by the Reapers. The Reapers capture Lincoln and bring him in and try to trade him, that the idea would be that they were draining them of their blood and then trading their basically carcasses for new people. And it's like a trade system where they get the blood, they take the blood, they give the bodies are eaten.
Yeah.
And, quite an astute observation, considering.
Yeah,
it seemed to be what's happening.
Yeah, and with such little information to suss that out was amazing. You did a great job.
Yes, absolutely. You were fantastic. So that was great.
So yeah, feed us all of your predictions. We're gonna read them aloud because they're great.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I was wondering, was it blood that they were getting at the end, or was it like a drug?
Yeah, when they were getting injected in the tunnel.
Yeah,
that's a good question. They say so they're looking at them and they say, the Cerberus project.
Yeah,
and they inject them with this red liquid. I don't think it was blood. I don't know what they'd be injecting them with blood for. They're just people. They're grounders.
Well, go on.
Yeah, it was Cerberus. And then they were saying harvest, and was there a third option?
Nope.
Because you see the guy with the weird head, the giant elephant head in the previous episode, hiding in the woods.
Yeah.
And then you notice a couple of these guys have like these growths on their head.
Mm-hmm.
Were those growths? Do you think that they're related to that guy at all? Do you think that guy is?
I mean, I think that guy would be an offshoot of a Reaper, just one that hasn't gone full cannibal. Like maybe he's a mutated person.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a whole mutated tribe, or people who have been mutated are rejected by everyone, and so they just kind of hang around in the forest,
yeah,
skulking all sad and stuff. My assumption is that like if they're not accepted for harvest or the Cerberus project, I assume they're killed,
just executed.
Yeah,
I guess so. I guess so. So, and when they had the guy who Finn ends up shooting,
mm-hmm,
and he says, "I'll draw you a map." Does he draw them a map before he shoots him?
I believe he does. Like they get the map, and then that's when they start wondering what to do. Though that whole thing made me, because the grounders don't have the children. So where does this map lead them to?
He might just know. He might know that the grounders, or he might know that the mountain people have the kids. He probably does.
I would assume so, but he made it seem like they had that, like they were keeping the kids hostage because until they're quote unquote until they wear out their usefulness.
Yeah.
So I mean, but I guess there is also the chance that we know that 48 have survived, but there could be more.
Sure.
That the grounders have captured.
Yeah. He says that. He says, "I'll give you a map." They kill him, and where was I going with this point? We were just talking about the mutated injections and the people I'm just going to let that thought simmer. You can say something and I'll come back to it.
Yes. So, and I had a thing like where I was, when they were injecting the Reapers with that drug.
Right.
I was like, oh my gosh, are they injecting the Reapers to make them into like normal people, or at least to bring them to like grounder standard so that they can harvest them as well?
Oh, this was my point. So the guy says, get to your friends. They don't have much time. And, well, do we think that the kids are at risk of being, like, used, drained, and eaten? Do we think, I mean...
I think they are. I want to say that they're being, essentially... They're being fattened up, yeah. Because he says that, yeah, they're essentially stronger in terms of their blood and the radiation,
right, digestion. Right, same thing.
Yeah, so, like... I assume that they're like, all right, we're going to get these kids, we're going to have them trust us, and then slowly they're going to start disappearing. Or it leads into what you were saying earlier, in that like we're not seeing these kids around, so maybe they are like all in a storage bin waiting to be harvested.
Yeah, you'd think that the kids that our three characters that we actually see would probably make reference to the fact that everyone was gone,
right,
if that were the case. But then on the other hand, we don't actually know how many people were there when they got there. Because if you do remember when Clark sees Monty and Jasper in the first episode, she like rejoices and hugs them. You see Miller, you see kids in the bunks, but I don't think they've ever said they're all 48 kids are here.
Yeah.
They've never actually said that. Nobody's ever been like, well, there's 48 of us in this camp, unless I missed it and you guys can point out. But
well, yeah. I mean, and Miller was just released yesterday, so it's a slow
quarantine process. That whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. We may see that develop. Anything else we want to make note of?
I guess the final thing would be after Clark is saved by Anya from the Mountain Men, Anya leads her to the dam, and it's just like, we got to jump.
It's like The Fugitive, except it's The Hundred.
Right.
It's just full on. That's a great. Love the reference because it's the best action movie ever.
Yeah. I don't care. Yeah. Anyway, let's just do that all night.
Yeah.
Make references. But so Clark jumps off. We find her on a rock, essentially knocked out. And Anya takes her, brings her to shore. And you think that they're going to be best friends.
Yeah.
And Anya smacks her with a rock.
Which
is like,
loved.
You're my prize.
Did you love that? Because I loved it. Yeah. I was totally like, yeah, Anya's a hard ass. And you killed all my friends. So I am going to hit you with a rock because I don't care that you got me out of the cage. I need revenge. And I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
That was great.
I agree.
It's realistic. She's not just some like patsy who's like, well, thanks for letting me out, Clark. And you're forgiven now. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I would have been so upset if she was just like, well, I guess we need each other now.
Yeah.
Pinky swear. Like, it's great that that was actually acknowledged, because I don't think anyone's really talking about the fact that, like, Clark killed a bunch of people with that rocket launch. So I'm glad that she is aware and it's going to be held against him. I will discuss it in predictions, but just what is going forward and their dynamic is interesting.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that pretty much covers it. I just liked that Anya did that sort of honest thing, and she comes back, and you're wondering why she came back and risked herself, and it's because she wanted to get Clark. And I mean, obviously, it's anytime you see, like I said, in The Fugitive or any other type of movie or show where they do the thing where somebody jumps from like a dam head like that and they jump, you know, however, a ridiculously far. I mean, water is water, but if you come down hard enough, you'll break your legs or your spine. So it's always a little like, okay, suspension of disbelief. You guys are just both okay. You just like landed and then you just drifted to the shore.
Yeah.
But I mean, whatever. It is what it is. She broke a lock with a pipe. So,
well, I mean, and I'm glad that she was actually like knocked out by it, where like usually that happens and they're just like, I'm going to swim away.
Right.
But it was like, no, she's marooned on a rock. So that was great.
Agreed. So what do you say about getting some predictions here?
Heck yeah. Let's do it.
And now you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Would you like to go first?
I'm going to think for a second here while you're speaking.
All right. We know that the next episode, I mean, I'm assuming we're going to get a lot of Clark and Anya, which I am super duper looking forward to. Just having these two antagonistic characters trying to accomplish whatever goal, because we know that Anya probably is trying to use her as a bargaining chip to get back in with the commander.
Right.
And we know that Clark just wants to escape and get back to the rest of her camp and see any kids who are missing.
Yep.
So just this back and forth of them trying to outsmart each other is going to be the best.
Yeah, it should be fun. Should be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, that should be fun to watch. We forgot to make reference to the fact that Lincoln was in the line of people. They give us Lincoln at the very end of the episode.
Yes.
And with that in mind, with Lincoln being part of the Cerebus Project, I feel like that probably, my prediction is that the Cerebus Project. I'm guessing that has something to do with repurposing useful grounders into some sort of like asset, like soldier, or some sort of like mind control type of shenanigans. I think that they're going to give us him being like doped up, and I have a feeling that that's going to be something we see, and that Octavia will then eventually have to confront a Lincoln that's like fighting for the wrong side.
That'd be great. I mean, and it would make sense with what the project is. So if they were to use, essentially, if they were to use grounders as their new guardians.
Right.
Cerberus being the guardian of the gateway to hell.
Right.
Then that would be amazing.
Yeah, and it could be cool. And we'll probably get to see Ricky Whittle with his shirt off somewhere, which all the fans seem to love, right?
Of course. How could you not?
jacked abs. So let's keep going with predictions. Anything else?
I mean, the only other thing that I'm looking forward to is I'm sure that Kane's whole mission to find the kids is going to go super awry, and I'm looking forward to him trying to diplomat his way with the grounder leaders.
Yeah, I have a feeling the other thing that we are going to see is Abby will probably realize that it's much harder to be Chancellor than she thinks, that she will sympathize with Kane more based on the fact that she will have a difficult time corralling the people to follow her correctly. She is a peacetime commander as opposed to like a wartime commander. They're kind of in war, so yeah. I have a feeling that something like that will happen. Something on her I just wanted to point out really quickly that I was noticing is she's such an iconic idea of an older woman who basically from the back dressed looks like she could be any character who's like 16 years old on the show.
Right.
And it's so interesting when you see like these CW shows with an older female character like that. She's still very beautiful, and she keeps herself like real skinny, obviously. It's just like so interesting that the body type of these characters and the looks of these characters, aside from just the physical aging, just doesn't ever change. They're expected to basically just like look like a slightly older version of the same 22-year-old female lead they always were. You know what I mean? She's clearly like also tiny. Like I mentioned the one time about Octavia. She probably weighs 100 pounds. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The show has a lot of beautiful people. Very beautiful. And they will always be beautiful. But that brings us to the end. Sadly, we are out of time.
All right.
So thank you for joining us for this week's The 100 Season 2 Episode 3 Recap. Ben Bateman, where can the people find you if they want to talk to you?
Twitter at Ben_Bateman or Instagram at Ben Bateman Media. I prefer Instagram.
Nice. And you can find me on Twitter at Tari J. That's TauriJay. You can also find me here at AfterBuzz on assorted panels, including the Sword Art Online panel on Sundays, Legend of Korra, and also Flash on Tuesdays. Thank you for joining us, and have a wonderful night.
Super awesome.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.